Thanks, Terry. So we're sort of at an inflection point with these policies. They've been implemented. They're on the books. We had this RFC last year. There was an apparent debate within the Trump administration about whether to lock down these policies and regulations. And the administration apparently flinched and decided not to do it. And then we had the election. And now this thing is, these policies are kind of teed up for the Biden administration. By the way, Judge Tierney put in a plug for the PTO's own product, the executive summary of the RFC comments. There are a lot of great RFC comments, over 800, and at least 100 of them are very substantive and unique and definitely worth reading. I just like to put in a plug for a page on Unified Patents website that collects a lot of the best comments and allows people to read, read them for their own and make up your own mind. A lot of people really put a lot of thought into this, and Unified Patents also has more of the comments that are somewhat critical of these policies. And on that theme, the benefit of FinTIV supposedly is you get to try, you get the decision faster. So if the district court schedules an earlier trial date and at least theoretically is going to get there faster, then you get this speed benefit, under the FinTIV policy. But what I'd like to focus on here in a couple of slides is the cost of these policies, something else that policymakers should be thinking about. This slide highlights what your typical PTAB final written decision runs about 50 to 100, pages, and it always has the same elements. There's a description of the claimed invention, any claim construction, a summary of what the prior art is, and then an explanation of how the limitations are met and what motivation there was to combine the limitations as claimed, or whether it was a design choice. And finally, there's always an analysis of any objective indicia of non-obviousness if those were present in a case. And if you could move on to the next slide, Terry. The board doesn't do this purely out of the goodness of its own heart. This is actually compelled by the Administrative Procedures Act, especially as enforced by the Federal Circuit. The Federal Circuit has adopted a fairly rigorous standard for what the board is required to include in every final written decision. It's emphasized, and this is again just applying the APA, the decision has to have the necessary findings and it has to have an evidentiary basis for those findings. The final written decision also has to offer a satisfactory explanation that makes a rational connection between those findings and the ultimate decision made, the court's holding. And the Federal Circuit has emphasized that you need these elements in the final written decision in order to ensure that that appellate review is possible. This is really for the benefit of the process and the next stage of review. This case, In Re Nuvasiv, the reason I'm so personally familiar with it is I'm actually the PTO attorney who lost this case back in 2016. This is a case where a petitioner settled and dropped out. The agency stepped in to defend the result at the Federal Circuit. And this was a case where the board followed this earlier practice that tended to focus more on summarizing what the parties say rather than on what the board itself concluded. And I spent about 10 minutes going back with Judge Toronto over this board decision saying, well, the board effectively found this. It's clear they did this and that. And at the end, Judge Toronto was having none of it. And they vacated and demanded this, set out this standard for here's what we want in your decision. And frankly, it's probably a good thing I lost that case. I've noticed since then, you do tend to see in board decisions more, less emphasis on just summarizing what the parties say and more emphasis on laying out the board's own findings, applying its expertise and explaining what the decision was. And that all contributes to this orderly process where you understand why the decision was made. And if you could skip to the next slide, Terry. The other thing worth noting about PTAB review is the judges are legally trained in patent law and technically trained in the subject matter, and the board overwhelmingly tries to assign judges so their technical expertise matches the case. And the result of that is reflected in a study that was published just 2 years ago by a law professor, Matthew Sipe. He studied all the cases that went up on appeal from both district courts and the board that were in fiscal years 2015 and 16. And his conclusions are pretty straightforward. This study is summarized in the United for Patent Reform RFC comments. He noted that the PTAB is affirmed notably more often than the district courts on these patent validity issues. In fact, according to Professor Seid's data summarized by UFPR, the district courts are almost 2.5 times more likely to be reversed on these issues than the board is. And the Sipe study reached what's the obvious conclusion that the judge's technical expertise has aided decision-making on the thorny scientific questions endemic to patent law. In other words, the board is doing exactly what Congress expected because it has this expertise that's better able to, you know, having a background knowledge of, you know, what the technology already does in the field helps you assess what's, you know, what's a real innovation in that field and what would have been obvious to a person of skill in the art. And with that, if you could move on to the next slide, Terry. And by the way, I should add, I've at least skimmed all of the 825 comments. There's no counter study out there. There's no one else who did an analysis and concluded, oh, juries are actually better at this. You know, having a blank slate, no knowledge of the technology actually helps you assess validity. No one of all the people who weighed in, and a lot of people supported the these denial policies in favor of juries, no one presents a colorable argument that the judge's technical expertise does not give them a leg up in accurately assessing patent validity. Well, so I've just summarized what you get in a typical board decision. Here are the elements of a jury's final written decision. Now, everything you see on the screen here that's printed is actually part of the verdict form. The jury's unique explanation of how it decided are just the six no's that you see here. Now, this happened to be actually be a case against Apple out in the Eastern District of Texas. It was a case over 4G technology, the long-term evolution, a telecommunications standard. The jury gave a judgment of $500 million. So why did they reject Apple's invalidity contentions about this patent? Your guess is as good as mine. Did they think a limitation wasn't present? Did they think that there was an inadequate motivation to combine the limitations as claimed? Perhaps the squiggle in one of those O's as the no's indicates that they thought the evidence of secondary considerations was particularly compelling in this case. But again, your guess is as good as mine. Not only do we have no idea what the jury was thinking or if it even grappled with these issues at all,